Hello, welcome to the fourth episode of our series, Chinese Dreams, from the campus here on the BBC World Service. Over the course of five programs, we're looking at how China's rise is causing upheavals in different nations across the globe. Today, we're in Kenya. I am Frenny Joey. I used to work for the BBC. Now, I'm a freelance journalist here in Nairobi. And in this episode, I'm going to be looking at China's huge investment in the media sector here in Kenya and across Africa. Should we Kenyans welcome this, or should we be worried? We need to start by watching some TV.
Hi, knock knock, who's home? Hello, welcome. Esther.
My name is Esther Njoki.
Oh, my name is Peter Mbugua, the head of family.
So tell us about, I can see you're watching a soap opera on Star Times. Tell us about the program.
Right now I'm watching The Crossing Ocean to the Sea.
It's like it brings the family together.
The favorite one comes at 10. It is called In the Name of Love. I love it very much.
And Chinese language soap operas like this have been dubbed not just into English, but also local languages.
It talks in our language, Kikuyu. I get really happy when I watch it.
So it's very interesting to see the Kikuyu voices and Chinese faces.
Yeah, I love it. And it is wonderful.
Lots of people have heard about China's big economic push in Africa. Billions invested in ports, road and rail. Less well known is China's push to get its message across, to become a big player in Africa's media scene.
Any channel we wish, or program we wish to see, we have catered everything. I'm a footballer fan.
So you get to follow football on Star Time?
Yeah, I'm a Manchester fan, and we are in Europe.
Peter and Esther live in a village on the edge of Nairobi. They pay a subscription to the Chinese media company Star Times, which has expanded rapidly across Africa, now reaching almost 10 million subscribers. For just a few dollars a week, Peter and Esther get access to 200 channels, something that until a few years ago was accessible only to well-off Kenyans. And part of what they get is a window into China.
Ah, look at the K-pop charts. Do I need to do that?
I see there is that differences, especially when you come to foods. You know, there are spoons.
They're eating using chopsticks.
Yeah. It really amazes me.
The good thing with the Chinese, if you wish to have something, you will work hard. They have that something inside.
Like they are determined.
Yeah, and they doing with happiness.
I want to find out how successful China's been in getting its message across to the rest of Kenya. Has it managed to penetrate Kenya's relatively vibrant media? And if so, what impact has that had? Do Kenyans see China differently as a result? And is there any less scrutiny of the controversial multi-billion dollar deals that China's been striking with the Kenyan government?
With a dedicated and diverse team of anchors, CGTN now brings Africa to the palm of your hand.
Penina Karibe in the heart of Nairobi, which is...
It's not just Star Times TV and its soap operas. China's state-run international broadcaster, CGTN, is beamed across Africa and has its African headquarters here in Nairobi, part of a media strategy dating back more than a decade.
My name is Danny Madrid Morales, and I'm an assistant professor of journalism at the Valente School at the University of Houston, and I study Chinese media in Africa. So the starting point would probably be in the mid-2000s, 2004. That's the date when China moved its headquarters for the Xinhua News Agency, a state-owned news agency, from Paris to Nairobi. And that starts a movement that would follow where they open a new newspaper, China Daily was launched, CGTN, formerly known as CCTV, opened its first overseas office in Nairobi, and then also a magazine called China Africa was launched, and CRI, the China Radio International, expanded its services.
There was this phrase, the Chinese are coming. And everyone wanted to be part of that. You know, everyone wanted to be associated with that.
Kevin Otiende worked for CGTN for 4 years, from when it first opened its office here in Nairobi in 2012.
CGTN was big news at the time. There were talk all over the media space that CGTN is coming. There was such an excitement. huge excitement. You can even call it euphoria at the time, because everyone just wanted to be with CGTN. We thought this is going to be the biggest thing, that CNN, BBC, Al Jazeera are going to take a backseat.
That's exactly what China's leaders were hoping would be the outcome when they launched their big media push. And they felt they had good reason to step things up.
So China, particularly after the Olympic Games in 2008, felt that the world was not understanding what China was all about. There was a sense that China was being misunderstood, and most Chinese leaders blame foreign media for that misunderstanding. So the idea was, if we launch our own TV stations, if we launch our own media organizations, we'll be able to control how China's story is being told overseas.
But this attempt to control how China's stories are being told has meant content that often looks close to propaganda. Kevin Otiende, who was initially so excited to work at CGTN, says he could not adapt to their style of reporting.
So I personally take journalism like a creed. Now, my idea of journalism and what I actually met at CGTN were like night and day, literally.
It's a stark difference.
It's a very stark difference, as you put it. What is news to us and what is news to the Chinese, they don't meet, they don't even mix.
If I get you clearly, it's more of, the good things that China has come to do for Africa, for Kenya.
Correct. What is news is what China has done here, which is okay because they brought the money, they brought the resources, they need to be selfish, but you need to be a bit balanced. Chinese media is one huge global PR agency. That's all they do.
Kenya, the second phase of the standard gauge railway has been commissioned by the country's president, Uhuru Kenyatta. The railway line.
I'm having a look at the CGTN website and I'm catching up with a previous news broadcast. This is Global Business News.
The SGR project was launched together with the Nairobi Express Highway and the Naivasha Inland Container Depot.
The quality is really good. It's high definition camera work, quite glossy. Like, this is a world standard, something you'd see on Sky, CNN or the BBC.
The construction of the SGR, which now connects the coastal city of Mombasa to Naivasha, is part of China's Belt and Road Initiative, which seeks to connect continents through one transportation network.
I must say, in comparison to how the local press covered the story, there's a stark difference because there was quite a negative tone with how the local press covering this, because they were asking questions about how much are we borrowing from the Chinese government to finance this kind of projects? Is this really going to give returns to the Kenyan economy?
The project also features three tunnels, including a 4.5-kilometer-long tunnel.
CGTN's bureau in Nairobi declined our request for an interview, as did the Chinese embassy. There's no doubt that CGTN has an agenda. It's not just positive about what China is doing. It's also positive in its reporting on African governments. You're unlikely to find stories about government mismanagement or corruption. But at the same time, they do offer a decent variety of African stories told by African journalists.
I've come to Day State University, one of the leading media schools in Kenya, and I've come to the cafeteria to meet a group of students, and I'm here to get their views about what they think of CGTN's coverage of Africa in the news. Anyone here who watches CGTN?
I do. I watch CGTN. I love the anchors, how they present, because I would love to be an anchor, so it's really interesting to see.
I think for it being able to be broadcasted in Kenya, it's like a competition and like a wake-up call to other stations.
How would you compare their coverage of Africa to the traditional Western media like the BBC and CNN and DW?
We have embraced them, the fact that they're telling positive stories, and the fact that BBC or other media houses could be telling negative stories about Africa. We call them out on that.
I think BBC does a job that not many people want to see, but they need to see. Of course, we want to see Africa covered in a positive light, but we can't run away from the fact that there are a lot of negative things happening in Africa and also need to be broadcasted so that change can occur.
My name is Wambui Wamunyu. I am a senior lecturer at Daystar University in the Department of Media and Film Studies. Before China, people like the BBC have been here and they set up their second largest bureau globally right here in Nairobi. Why? You're trying to entrench yourselves at a local level. Let's reach the billion people on the African continent. So it's a race. There's a race for us. Yeah, so China is racing for us. You are also racing for us and everyone else who is making these huge investments on the continent. And the question is, I hope for us as Africans, we can also realize we are very attractive right now.
All that makes it sound a bit like a media war. But the irony is that for all the money China has invested in CGTN, its audience in Kenya and Africa as a whole is still very low, nowhere near that for local Kenyan news channels or CNN or the BBC. But it's not just through CGTN that China has attempted to get its message across. Hundreds of journalists from Kenya and from other African countries have been taken to China for training.
So we went there for an exchange program where we were to be exposed to how China does its stuff.
Mark Kapchanga is a business journalist here in Nairobi. He's also written for the Chinese newspaper, The Global Times.
We interacted with different people from government and even journalists, senior journalists. So it was more to do with exchanging of ideas, how they do their work, how we do our work, and at what point we can converge our ideas.
Tell us more about these Chinese ideas. Have they in any way reshaped your sense of journalism, your sense and style of writing?
It has not impacted on the style of writing, but it has impacted on how I perceive issues. Before, I could see anything China in a negative way. But what I really discovered there in China was the form of journalism they call constructive journalism, more to do with the developmental kind of reporting where you don't focus so much on the negatives, but you look at the long-term impact of a project or idea that these Chinese firms are pursuing in Africa.
Others are more concerned. Patrick Gadara is a journalist and a cartoonist.
They are taking some of our best and brightest and sort of conditioning them, you know, and they get inculcated in a way of doing things that is very China-centric, that kind of supports their way of telling stories. But it has an African face. So when a guy comes back here, it's an African reporting it. And it can be sort of deceptive in the sense that we might think that it's us telling our own stories when it is really not.
And there is another more subtle way some believe China is influencing the local media here, and that's to do with advertising. Take the new Chinese-built railway line. Kenyans were supposed to play a key role alongside Chinese workers running it. But in July 2018, the Standard newspaper ran an article describing a very different picture.
There was this actual story that was going on of deep racism, of, you know, discrimination and so on. So I had to go in, and I was there for 2 weeks, and I spent time just understanding how they operate.
Paul Wafula is an investigative journalist who at the time was at the Standard newspaper. He went undercover at the railway and published articles alleging many of the skilled Kenyan workers were there just for show.
Like the people who are picked as locomotive drivers, they went in there and they were basically there for PR, taking pictures that the train is being driven by Kenyans. But immediately the camera is off, they are pushed back and the real drivers were Chinese, take charge. So there were really different standards in there, and I found it really, really concerning.
The story provoked resentment at Chinese workers apparently doing jobs Kenyans should be doing. Paul Wafula says that after publication, the Chinese authorities brought pressure to bear on his bosses.
At the time, we had done the story so well, but you find that the Chinese government had invited editors to go and have a conversation around our coverage of their issues. And then from there, I think they cut a deal of having to advertise, maybe take a page in the Standard almost every week, once a week or once a month, I'm not sure. But there was money, advertising money from that. And then from there, when they came, everybody was saying you are the main subject of the discussion and they're wondering if you can stop writing the stories. And so, you know, when an editor or one of your bosses tells you that I think you've done enough on China, you can do other things. It does not appear as if we have a personal issue. That is basically an editor telling you, look away. So you feel like you have been cut off.
Paul Wafula says he chose to leave the Standard as a result. The Chinese embassy, in a statement, told us no such meeting took place with editors from the Standard. They say at no point have the Chinese authorities made any request to media houses in Kenya to refrain from publishing critical stories in return for advertisements. The Standard did not respond to a request for comment.
Now, it might not necessarily be that there's a direct link to China or the Chinese government or the Chinese embassy. But when you look on stories specifically about China, you find that there tends to be a certain bias towards dropping uncomfortable, unfortunate stories.
Patrick Gadara believes it's not just the possible lure of advertising revenue that may influence local media reporting. There's a separate risk to their independence. And that's the growing amount of material, video, pictures and text that CGTN and China's news agency, Xinhua, provide free to local newsrooms.
There's lots of Xinhua content, for example, that's simply repackaged, you know, and put out without citation. So people are not aware that this is coming, where this is coming from. And I think in the long term, the idea would be to change the perception, their underlying image, if you will, of China as a more benevolent actor, sort of the big brother who's going to help us develop, you know, rather than as a power that's just coming to exploit as the colonials did a century ago.
And that's the fear. If China is successful in influencing narratives, this could mean less critical reporting. Will journalists be as ready to challenge the Kenyan government, particularly about the huge and sometimes opaque deals that it's striking with China and about the alleged corruption that surrounds some of them? So where does the Kenyan government stand?
In my view, nobody does better branding and PR in cleaning the image like the UK and the US. We all know it. So let China be. Let them do business. It's willing buyer, willing seller. And I think China is doing the right thing by coming to Africa.
Dr. Ezekiel Mutua is the head of the Kenya Film Classification Board, the body charged with regulating film and TV content. He's a big supporter of the shift in economic ties Kenya has made towards China under President Uhuru Kenyatta. The critics say that the Chinese journalism or way of doing stories is only presenting the positives and trying to hide, you know, what critics say is government corruption. What's your comment on that?
If you are to ask me one country that I would want us to collaborate in terms of the media, in terms of film, and in terms of our culture, it would be China. It would not be US or UK. It would not be the West. We'd like to collaborate with countries that are patriotic, that have a sense of discipline, that have citizens that are hardworking, that embrace honesty. And I think US or any other country cannot hold a counter against the Chinese. They are not coming illegally. They are not colonizing us. The media is no exception. And when it comes to branding their country and presenting China as a great nation, as a superpower, or whatever you want to call it, it is their business. It's for us to debunk that. Nobody is telling the local media not to write and debunk that myth, if it's a myth.
There are always different sides to a story. We put the focus on the details. To see more, to understand better. CGTN. See the difference.
And China may have a weapon that's more effective than CGTN or the training programs for foreign journalists. Soaps.
I won't let you off so easily for this. Never.
As we heard earlier, Chinese media company StarTimes has proved very popular in Africa.
I don't want to spend the rest of my life with you.
I don't buy a word. You can save your breath.
This is In the Name of Love. Just one of its soap operas. And back in the village of Kangemi, Esther is glued to her set.
Ma, what are you doing here? What's going on here?
He told her not to come back because they already know she's dead.
Oh, okay, so she still has to continue faking her death.
Yeah.
She's your sister-in-law. Do you have any sense of shame?
Then the sister comes. Then they fall in love.
Oh,
he falls in love.
Complicated now.
Yeah.
It's such a complicated story. I think I should also make time to watch it.
There's no doubt StarTimes has a loyal fan base. But Dani Madrid Morales from Houston University says it's important to remember that although it's a private commercial company, it's closely aligned to the Chinese government.
What's very interesting about Startimes is that software content that they provide. So these soap operas will portray China as a very developed country, a very developed society with modern technology, very urban centers, and we hardly ever see any poverty. We hardly see any of the rural settings in which hundreds of millions of Chinese are still living, right? So that software side is the one that provides content that is very positive of China. And that's going to leave people with a view of China that it's not complete.
Startimes here in Kenya did not respond to our request for an interview. Just like the plots of one of Esther's soap operas, it's all quite complicated. We've heard how China now has different avenues through which it could exert influence in Kenya. But at the same time, it's delivering content that's genuinely popular and has given Kenyans more choice in news and entertainment, and at a good price. Where are things heading in the future, though? Dani Madrid Morales believes there are reasons to be concerned.
What we are seeing with Chinese state-owned media is that they are more far-reaching than any other global player. If you take the whole operation together at once, you'll see that in the TV sector, in both the private and the public sector, they are providing content to both newspapers and TV stations. They are creating their own content. They have their own network of stations through Startimes. And that's something that no other global player has ever been able to do in any African country in the post-colonial times. So what's important to keep in mind when we look at this increased presence of Chinese media in Kenya, at least, is that if that continues growing, they're going to be able to shape the narrative in a way that no other country has ever been able to do.
Much will depend on African governments, the amount of influence or control they will allow China to have. And that's likely to depend, in turn, on how the relationship with China develops. Patrick Gadara, the journalist and cartoonist again.
China then also becomes a model. And you've had a lot of people talking about the Chinese model of governance. We've had information ministers from the continent, from Africa, going to China to learn about media relations. You know, what do you think they're being taught there? You know, and that's the thing, is they are learning how to clamp down on freedoms. They are learning how to circumvent this whole push towards democratization and to sort of, by holding up China as this big brother, sort of this big model, they can then legitimize their own oppressions. So they can show, oh, by delivering railways or stadia or ports, that they are bringing quote-unquote development. But for them to do this, they've got to do it the way China does, which is then clamp down on freedoms. We really shouldn't question what we are doing, etc. And I think for me, controlling the media in that sense is a crucial part of that enterprise.
Now, the Kenyan government rejects this view. It argues it has protected media freedoms and that the sheer diversity of the media in Kenya means China won't be in a position to exert control. Joe Mucheru is Kenya's cabinet secretary for information.
The audience have the freedom. We have 174 radio stations in Kenya. We have 75 TV stations. If you're not happy, switch. We have channels that deal with Christianity alone. So if you're not a Christian, no one is forcing you to watch the Christian channel, watch the Muslim channel, or actually watch Cartoon Network, watch whichever channel that you choose. So if they're feeling that the Chinese are giving their own Chinese views, no one is dictating to them that they must watch and listen to the Chinese. They have their choice.
Of course, the degree of China's influence on Kenya's media scene in the future won't just depend on China or on the Kenyan government.
You know, there's something I'm getting very uncomfortable with. It's the idea that it is the others who will come and then define the journalism we will do for ourselves. I mean, are we just waiting to just for someone to show up and tell us? I actually don't think so.
Dr. Wambui Wamunyu from Daystar University says much will depend on us, Kenya's current and future crop of journalists.
So when someone says, oh, the BBC have come, they've taken us for training, so we do journalism their way, or the Chinese have come and we do journalism their way, aren't we thinking? I took offense, actually. Let's tell our stories as ourselves. Let's tell the good, the bad, and the ugly, because they are all here. It's exciting right now, by the way, that because of digital technologies, we are seeing new upcoming forms of storytelling. We are seeing new young mediapreneurs, if I can call them that, someone who's just been to school, graduated, can't get a job, but they've got a mobile phone, and they're setting up, you know, these mobile companies, and they're telling interesting stories. That's not China. That's not VOA. That's us.
And it is down to us. China will continue having an influence on the media across Africa. And maybe that will grow if it continues to sign big infrastructure deals. But I don't see it controlling the narrative about China here in Kenya. Not as long as the press here stays relatively free, and as long as we troublesome journalists continue fighting to be heard. This edition of The Compass on the BBC World Service was presented by me, Frenny Joey, and produced by Rob Walker. Next week, the final part of our series, Chinese Dreams, takes us to India, where Shabnam Grewal will be investigating the complex feelings that Indians have towards their increasingly rich and powerful neighbor.
For teenagers like me, it's hard to imagine a world where the tech we take for granted didn't exist.
We didn't have email back then. You know, everything was mail, or we didn't have internet.
So in our new podcast, Worldwise Web, 12 of us from around the world will be spending time with the people who invented it.
We believed someday everybody would have a cell phone.
Finding out how they came up with their ideas.
I'm always saying yes to the weirdest of things just so I can find all those crazy things in life that are really fun.
And asking for advice.
You got to figure out what drives you. What makes you really happy? Do that.
That's Worldwise Web from the BBC World Service.
You have conducted probably one of the greatest interviews I've ever had.
Search for Worldwise Web wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay, bye. Thank you very much.